Well, it is St. Patty's Day in my time zone now, the Central Time Zone. So we're going to do some of that tonight as well. St. Patty's Day on Saturday. That song, by the way, O Danny's Boy, I remember it primarily because I saw a movie called The Memphis Belle about a World War II bomber and bomber squad. Great movie. And the song was so perfect for that movie, Memphis Belle. If you haven't seen it, men or women, you'll all like it. Believe me, it's not just one of those tough war movies. Pick it up. It's been out for a very long time. Back in a moment, Conversations with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here in St. Louis, it was just 1, 11, and 11 seconds. I can't get away from those numbers. Linda, anything new to that story that you were checking into about what could have been a UFO buried under the sands of Utah? Remember that one?
Yes, and like so many other in the UFO phenomena that dissolve into confusion and attacks and all of that, the whole point of that research was to follow up on a man in California who had been there two or three times, had known people who had climbed down into the basement of one of those buildings and found these log diaries and the satellite image, which does exist. There was this huge triangle there and is still there today, somewhat eroded. But back in the 1953, June 11th, 1953 time period, why was this gigantic, very defined, huge triangle there out in what is called the Dress Facility area? And the fact that there were citizens that I interviewed, many of them, I talked to 20, 30 people. Some of them had been around in 53 in that period of time, and they remembered about all of the UFO sightings. And there was this historic context for that report. Well, since doing the report and the man in California providing all the material, others have come forward and they're tacking the details of it. And from my point of view as a reporter, this is the kind of a story that needs somebody else to come with a lot of money and do the kind of aerial magnetometer surveys, yes, and those sort of things that those of us that have humble lives cannot do. But there are people who certainly, if they have interest, could back up a follow-up, take this research and develop it further. But like so many things, it seems to just dissolve into bickering.
Well, knowing you with your guts, Linda, you'd be out there with a shovel.
Probably.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with Linda Moulton Howe. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from? Yeah.
Okay, this is Angela. I'm calling from Covington, Louisiana.
All right, Angela, go ahead.
Linda, by the way, I love your newsletter on the computer.
It's a news website. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering because I have what I believe is that skin condition.
Oh, Magellan's.
Morgellons.
Yeah, Magellan's. Yeah. And also, I was wondering, could there be a connection? Because I think it comes from contact with insecticides. And I'm wondering, could there be a connection between the honeybees, the skin conditions that are showing up, and also the, not the Alzheimer's, but, you know, the other, the disease that's in I've got a senior minute. Excuse me.
Like Alzheimer's for people?
Yes. Yeah, or not Alzheimer's, but with the children, my little nephew's got now, you know, that
ADD? ADD?
Yeah. Yeah, all those type of things. That's right.
Well, you're asking a question that a lot of people are beginning to ask, I think, not just in the United States, but all over the world who have some concern about Earth life, and that is there are a lot of syndromes, and there are a lot of animal extinctions, and now there is this issue with pollinators. We can't seem to get a paper trail on what the government is or is not doing, let's say with chemtrails. We can't seem to get any honest assertion on a lot of fronts about what kind of pollution might be going on in our water and our air, because it might threaten corporate profit bottom lines. There is there is so much of that in this world now, and it is the health of people and the planet that really does take a back seat, unfortunately, to net profit sheets. And I think that one of the frustrations is that there are a lot of problems, and that perhaps the answers are often hidden in this issue of trying to understand what could be happening to the honeybees. What I have been learning from people, unfortunately so far, largely off the record, about how much has been suppressed, and that more and more people are beginning to dig out the bad laboratory links. One just recently, this is one that can be talked about publicly. The Sierra Club, Greenpeace prevailed in a court case that involved Russia, a Russian lab. And now this is another one of the question marks. Did that Russian lab have a link to Monsanto in the United States? And is that why their research on Monsanto genetically modified potatoes that killed rats, was it suppressed for 8 years on purpose because Monsanto did not want to be embarrassed? That appears to be the implication, and what has happened is the suit that Greenpeace prevailed was simply getting the lab report made public. Can you believe this? And the lab report is saying essentially that these genetically modified potatoes were inedible for any life form. Now, this is not said as an attack on that corporation or anybody else's corporation, but this is a fact that it came out in a court that was published, that there was an effort to suppress data about genetically modified food. That is the fact. You can't go beyond that. You can say, okay, if that happened in that research on those genetically modified potatoes, how much other research with damaging implications are also being hidden from us.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, this is Bob from Miami. George, what an honor. And Linda, thank you for informing us on this very pertinent issue. If I may say so, I'd like to go and first touch upon the chemtrails and mention that I have been aware of a researcher that has found barium in the chemtrails, and I wondered if that may be a link. And one more thing. Rather than seeking Osama bin Laden, I wondered if maybe others who are listening thought that it's a conspiracy for population control. George, I know you mentioned this to her on the last program, and Alex Jones talks about this, and they're trying to put us in a police state, or they're going to put us in some camps, and this would be a perfect opportunity to start controlling our food sources and whatnot. And by the way, I just really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me say what I wanted to say.
Well, okay, thank you. Thank you for thinking. They're all good questions, but I would say that the larger argument is that it is against the corporate interests of the United States, and it is against national security, and it is against the interests of any sitting presidential administration to have the food supply to the United States of America in the hands of China or Brazil or any other country.
It's amazing how it's doing a flip-flop where we used to be the ones controlling the world's food supply.
And you heard Jerry Hayes talk about the USDA projected estimate that some 40% of our vegetables, our fruits, and all of this could be coming from China in another 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing.
I can't... My rational left brain mind says it makes no sense for the corporate greed, military-industrial complex to have the food supplies of the United States dependent upon potential enemies. Therefore, I would say that whatever is happening to the pollinators of North America, it may be related to pollution, contamination, and a whole complex series of things that part of what we talked about tonight and other things that we still don't know anything about. But I do not think at this point that there would be any reason to suggest that this government was trying to affect this. This is be truly cutting off your nose to spite your face. And when I've talked with some scientists and others about the Osama bin Laden al-Qaeda connection to long-time connection to the honeybee trade in the Middle East, people are aware, and I did have an interview that was quite difficult because the person did not want to comment. And when I realized how difficult they were being and knew that it was because they didn't want to say, and I know their role and I know what they do, it says to me that our government is looking at the possibility of some sort of outside influence. However, I would think right now, just based on tonight is one facet of a real problem that is developing in this country and other countries having to do with pesticides, herbicides, and all of that. There are already known links that tie contamination in water through herbicides, such as Roundup, to the deaths of amphibians. That's been established. So we know that there are dominoes falling out in the world in isolated cases that link directly to contamination, chemical contamination. I think that this story and the science, a lot of scientists, even though they can't say anything on the record, no one can say this is the answer because they don't. They just don't have a bottom line.
Nobody knows.
But the whole question of the chemistry of this planet now, the complexity of it, and when you talk about these nicotine-based pesticides that can interfere with a bee's memory, that they combined with certain fungicides expands, or that was the word, synergizes the toxic effect 1,000 times over its experimental use in the lab. My Lord. And these are things that are just being discovered. So I think at the top of, near the top of the list of candidates for several problems, and the woman asked also about more gallons. This is still a problem. It is out there. I get emails all the time. I know that there are really hardworking people trying to understand what this strange thing is that is affecting a lot of people having these projections of. That's the question. That's still not clear. What are these fibrils coming through people's skin? And you can step back and say, all right, there are a lot of things affecting humans, affecting amphibians, pollinators, birds. Birds are dying all over the place. And there's a lot that's off and wrong for some everything on this planet. And then you get to the question of global warming. Are the changes in temperatures that are beginning now to form a very, very clear pattern? We just had NOAA announce this 2006 December to February 2007 is the single warmest average global temperature on record for the world. Never been that warm in those months ever before since humans have been keeping records.
Worldwide.
And this is a constant trend. There has not been any year in which the temperature average has been going down. It has been constantly climbing. And what this is beginning to show also on very clear biodiversity maps is that moisture, temperature, desertification, they are changing. The ocean surface temperatures are changing. And when all of that gets put together, there was one of the most interesting articles that came out from Stanford just this week, and it was entitled Crops Feel the Heat as the World Warms. And I underlined a particular paragraph, and it was a surprise. It said that scientists now working at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory and with Food and Agricultural Organization, with the UN and Stanford and a whole lot of places, that they have found on average that the global yields for several crops went down the warmer the temperature became, and that with the yields dropped by about 5% for every 1 degree Fahrenheit increase. This surprised scientists, and you know that does not bode well for a planet that is projected to warm maybe as much as 10 or 11 degrees Fahrenheit over the next 90 years. What will happen to crops and pollinators and Earth life if you start finding that you can't get a handle on a control even on what's happening to crops? And on top of this, one of the scientists I talked to brought up a very interesting point. The president just got back from a meeting down in Brazil. There was an agreement. We are supposed to now in the United States, we're going to start trying to make huge acreages growing crops for ethanol. Well, if we use whatever it's going to be, corn or sunflower seeds or whatever, and we start competing our food-growing soils with soils that are going to be allocated for energy, and that depending upon what they spray and how large these fields become for energy, not food, what is that going to do to the balance of nature that is clearly off balance now and affecting the pollinators?
True. I know a few years ago, the American Corn Growers Association claimed that they could provide all the feed they needed and ethanol, but I'm not sure that's the case anymore. I'm also surprised, Linda, that the supposed mastermind of 9/11, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, hasn't taken responsibility for all the dying or missing honeybees, because he is taken responsibility for every other terrorist act.
Do you believe that guy?
There's something fishy there too. Yeah. But you know, here's the caller's other question about the possibility of population control. Though as far fetched as it may seem, you know what? I don't rule anything out anymore, Linda.
But the corporate greed people need the populations to purchase to keep their hamster cages going and their profit line expanding. It's a terrible world we're in now because everything is being driven by the wrong priorities.
Linda, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to take final phone calls with you. I can't believe 2 hours with you have already buzzed by this quickly. If you need to get to any of Linda's work, that's earthfiles.com. You can email her at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And in my particular case, you can email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. And then next hour, for the next 2 hours, we'll have our Friday into Saturday morning open lines and a special hotline for crazy stories. But I'll have to explain that first. I'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls, conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's Friday, and it's traditional for me to say hello to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations across North America. Thank you so much for your support, keeping Coast to Coast the highest-rated overnight talk show in the world. Streamlink members, couldn't do it without you, Coast Riders. Thank you so much, XM Satellite. And then the various chat rooms, my favorite chat rooms all around the country. The NighthawkZone.com folks, very supportive of this program. Imaginative Worlds with Captain Beyond. And then we've got the Frog Forum, Into Infinity, National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, Yahoo chat rooms, MySpace. They're coming up with various little chat rooms as well. It's just amazing how it begins and then it grows. Thanks so much for all of you participating in Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We're with Linda Moulton Howe. Let's go back to the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on with Linda. Hi there.
Hi, George. It's a pleasure listening to you.
Well, thank you so much.
You're so fantastic, and I love Linda.
Thank you.
Linda, I have a couple questions for you. I live out in the country here near Hershey, Pennsylvania, and I noticed even on my little country roads, there's not enough milkweed for the monarch butterflies, and the chicory is getting scarce. because I use chicory. I dry the herb, the root, and I grind it up and put it in coffee. And, you know, and these pesticides, I'm very concerned. I have a background in biology, and I was wondering if they, you know, the more they apply and then they reapply a different herbicide or pesticide, these two could combine to form a different pesticide. In other words, you take two pesticides, and if you spray one on top of the other, they can produce a third.
That's right. That's what that synergy comment was about. And the fact that they found that the fungicide mixed with that neonicotinoid would exacerbate or increase the dynamic of the impact by 1,000 times over its toxic ability in the lab, that is really, that's really something, actually.
Well, I feel that it might be a fungicide that's killing off the bees, because a fungus would be the easiest thing for to grow in a hive. So, I mean, I had a bee fly in on my sunboards the other day, and I looked at the poor thing, and I said, what's happening to your society? You know, I mean, I felt so sorry for the bee.
Right.
And we should feel sorry for ourselves, because what affects them comes up the food chain.
That's right.
And we're the top of the food chain.
Well, and as Jerry Hayes said, he looks at after a long life of working with bees, he looks at them as a canary in the coal mine and says, this is happening to the bees. Maybe this is a warning to humans. Many people have been saying that. And that there is something really out of whack, out of balance in the environment that is causing this problem.
Right.
I wonder how many of you, including George, knew that the National Academy of Sciences last year had a meeting with other scientists and agency people in Washington specifically on the issue of the rapid decline of all pollinators in North America. That is not something that was blasted around on the 6 o'clock news, and it it should have been.
They don't tell us anything on the news. That's why I listen to George Norrie, because you find out where earthquakes are, you find out where volcanic eruptions are, you find out all this on coast to coast.
And I hope that
you I guess you find out where you can stick your head in the sand and hide from all this, too. Huh?
No, George, I hope and pray that everybody learns to live in harmony with our planet, Mother Earth, and because she feeds us.
Yeah.
And, no doubt about that.
If they don't learn to live in harmony with her, we are in for a very big havoc future.
Yeah, and I hope that you and all the Coast listeners will also visit earthfiles.com, because that is my goal, reporting and editing a news website that is focused around science, environment, and real X files, and trying to report hard facts about subjects that should be on the network 6 o'clock news and for the most part are not, and may be the subjects that affect all of us the very most. So I hope you will all go to earthfiles.com, and I will have a very interesting report up either after I'm off of Coast tonight or by tomorrow morning if the server is fixed, and it will include some very interesting photographs, maps, and this list with hard links to all of these various apiary honeybee websites that you can all go to learn more. And then if you have something happening in your area, you can communicate to people who are trying to study this seriously. So, and for those who have something that you think might be linked to the pollinator decline in your region that may not be reaching the news, if you will please email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. Think of a reporter filing news about the earth, and it is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. I would very much like to hear from people about what might be happening in your community concerning honeybees and all of the pollinators.
You know, Linda, you look at all the drama shows on television and what they have in the movies. Real life is the most dramatic of all of it.
Always has been. That's why Earth Mysteries, to me, is the most fascinating subject that you can possibly begin to get into. The world is so far stranger. Who was it? It was one of the great writers who said that the universe is far stranger than anybody could ever imagine. I think it was Shakespeare, one of those lines. But and along the issue of remarkable things happening, a footnote on the honeybees that I learned just tonight. And this gives you a feeling of why that Mr. Van Engelsdorp said to me this afternoon that this is an emergency situation on the honeybees. There is a beekeeper in the Texas area, and he had marked his hives 4 weeks ago, George, 4 weeks ago. That was mid-February. We're at March 16th. Yep. And he put numbers on them. And when he put the numbers on them, it was specifically because he wanted to track the health, and he wanted to have a number system on his hives. And 4 weeks ago, they were all healthy, full. He said you couldn't have had a healthier colony. And right now, of the numbers, he used specifically, he said, the one I marked number 9, Linda, it's completely gone in 4 weeks. Now, this means what others have said, whatever this is, it happens rapidly. It's not going away. And when it hits, the collapse, that colony collapse, the colony is going from what appears to be vigorous health and collapses as rapidly as 4 weeks and is completely gone.
Linda, as we unfold this incredible story, is also going to be fascinating to see, and I hope not, if anything happens physically to any of these beekeepers. Is that a possibility?
Nobody has brought that up yet. It hasn't come up. I don't know of a case of a beekeeper being affected. And what you would mean, if it was related to pesticides, would there be anything about the hives themselves that would be toxic enough to people to pick up?
Yep.
I'm not aware of anything like that happening, but they do know that when they air out these hives, it could be days or week, maybe even longer, then those, what they call the pests or the predators, those wax moths and the beetles, will move into the deserted hives finally, and they will go after the honey and the whatever pollen and nectar is in there. And that is intriguing because you would think then that the beetles and the wax moths would die from whatever it was that caused the honeybees to go away. But I want to stress something that only became clear to me tonight in talking with the beekeeper who had 13,000 hives and has lost 96% of them have disappeared. He said, when you have the what they call the flat board in a hive, if you have a disease or if you have mice, you find dead bodies on that flat board. And he said, you open up the hives with this phenomenon that's occurring. He says, it's clean. Everything is clean. That is the weird part. And Mr. Van Engelsdorp brought up something today. He said another part of this, why he's not convinced it's pesticides and why he's not convinced that it's a lot of things. He said, we're finding that there can be colony collapse of, let's say, 80% of the colony, all these hives, and 100 feet away are more hives of the same beekeeper in the same colony, and they are healthy and untouched. He said, how can this be? And this is giving you some of the reasons why. This is just really frustrating to everybody who's trying to study it.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Thanks for holding.
Rather than beat a dead horse, we're playing a bad case of Jenga in a spherical sense with our delicate nature here. I think we're running out of time, and I think that 111 thing is telling us the reason why that keeps popping up is it's saying, hey, folks, we don't have much more time to turn this around. If we don't do something now, we're going to lose it all, and it's all collapsing in on us.
Yes, I would agree with you, and it is part now, it's becoming like an umbrella theme song, an inconvenient truth at so many levels on this planet of so many environmental warning bells going off. And an inconvenient truth is the title of the documentary that won the Academy Award that started out as Al Gore's slideshow on global warming. And now there are inconvenient truths that are prevalent everywhere. And another one of these that is a kind of a sidebar, perhaps, and may or may not turn out to be directly related to what's happening with the pollinators. But just in the last couple of years in India, when the people have gone out to harvest cotton, it's the genetically modified crops are focused in certain crops. Cotton is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
These are cotton collectors who have been working in India for centuries, right? I mean, not the same person, but the whole concept of people in India going out into the fields and harvesting cotton has been going on for.
Of course, they believe in reincarnation. Maybe it is the same person, Linda.
Well, but they have found just in the advent of the genetically modified cotton that people break out with horrible rashes, terrible allergic coughs. People in India who have not gone to doctors before are going to doctors with allergic reactions to collecting cotton. And this is so puzzling because why is it that the genetically modified cotton plant would be any radically different from a naturally evolved cotton plant? Well, this is a program that I would like to do at some point in the future, is specifically about what exactly does happen with genetically engineered crops. And one of the things that I've been learning is there is a author, Jeffrey Smith. He's got a new book that'll be out in April. It's called Genetic Roulette. He's the author of Seeds of Deception. And he lays out very clearly that when you go into the genome sequencing of, let's say, a corn plant DNA, and you want to insert a gene that's going to be resistant to an herbicide, you're not just like, as he says, like in Legos, you aren't neatly inserting one piece in between two other pieces. They are now finding that there's destruction on either side in the DNA sequencing where that gene is inserted. Well, what does that destruction in the process of trying to put a gene in do? And this is the world that is apparently so not understood that we're taking for granted that these are scientifically precise procedures, and they may not be, that there may be unexpected consequences from trying to insert one gene. And when you realize that some of the genetically modified research includes something like this, you take a gene from a spider that is involved with the making of silk from the spider's point of view,
mm-hmm.
and you insert it into a plant with the idea that the plant will then be able to produce these fibers, not from the spider, but in the plant
on its own,
that you harvest for Kevlar or military vests.
Jeez.
Okay, now that's why sometimes it's called Frankenstein crops and Frankenstein weeds. Well, the motivation might be a good motivation. It may not have anything to do with original negative intent. But I think that what all of this is beginning to boil down to, the pollinators dying off, the birds dying off, the amphibians dying off, the oceans are changing, everything is changing, is that we humans have gotten to a point where we are manipulating now, even at the genetic level, in ways that have such unexpected consequences that we do not know what we are doing, and we are not going to know what we're doing. There will not be a scientist on this planet who will know the consequences until time runs on, and then there may be too much damage. And that seems to be the rickety place not only for where are we with pesticides, where are we with genetically modified crops, and where are we with a growing CO2 blanket around this planet that is warming it. This is independent of any speculation about the sun. We have a blanket, and it's getting thicker around this planet, and the projection is no matter what, this Earth is going to continue to warm up in this century again with unexpected consequences.
And it's not nice to fool Mother Nature, is it, Linda?
Well, I think that we children of God have a lot of lessons to learn.
We might have time for one more quick question. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I keep bees as a hobbyist.
Okay.
And I live very rural, and my bees are actually doing quite well, but I'm at a very high altitude, and it's very clean up here. There's no pesticides. There's no... I live in the wilderness.
You are one of the lucky ones. It hasn't gotten to you yet, Sharon, but you know what? A few months ago, there were some beekeepers that were saying that, Linda.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yes. And are you saying that so far in your isolation, you're seeing that your bees are remaining quite healthy?
So far, so good for her. And she claims that she's up high enough away. But I don't know if you can hide from whatever is happening to these honeybees.
Well, that's what we're going to see this summer. And let's pray, all of us, that the bees are somehow, with spring and summer coming on, as few as there are, that they might, with new pollen and new nectar that may not be as contaminated as whatever happened in the fall of 2006 and the summer of 2006, maybe the bees are going to be able to turn around. If not, like Dave Hackenberg said, we could be with food shortages at the end of 2007.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you.
I always wonder if a bee will just do as much as it has to do, or just clocks out whenever, you know, it thinks it's finished. Do they pick up the slack of the other bees now who aren't around? That's an interesting possibility. 2 hours of open lines up next on Coast to Coast AM.